Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're talking with Chris and Christy from Life Opted Out.
That's right, Joel. For this episode, we have Chris and Christy here with us for a live in-person interview. Close to a year ago, they embarked on an adventure where they chose to leave their life in New York City for a much simpler and a much more affordable life, all while traveling and experiencing all that our country has to offer. And it turns out that a lot of what they've learned up to this point is not exclusive and specific to van life on the road. Their lessons can also be applied to anyone living a more traditional, stationary life like us. So we are excited to chat with them about that. And also because over a million folks are traveling around the country in some sort of van right now. And plus, some of our listeners have been asking about this too.
Yeah, and we are changing up the Money Pro episodes. We loved kind of that format, but we missed the kind of interview format too. The fact that we could connect with people, sit down and have a conversation. And so, Matt, we're excited to kind of transition and do more interview-based episodes as opposed to those kind of prepackaged Money Pro type shows that we were doing. Yeah, but onto the beer. We are drinking a lovely beer today. It's called Nothing Left to Give by Orpheus Brewing. It's a raspberry sour.
And I know that you're going to love this beer because you like anything raspberry.
Exactly. Yeah. And our friend Jimmy down at Orpheus Brewing here in Atlanta was kind enough to give us some of this beer. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to tasting this one. Sadly, Chris and Christy,
side note, right?
They're not drinking beer because it's Lent. So Chris and Christy, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here, guys. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And I'm just so sad that you're not drinking with us, but that's okay. We can still be friends and we'll send you beer with you so that you can have it when Easter hits.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, I'm so glad that you are here with us. You want to introduce exactly who you are and why you guys are on the road doing this project, Life Opted Out.
So we used to live in New York City and Washington, D.C. Christy is an attorney and I'm a journalist. I was a political journalist, covered campaigns, politics, was on the road a lot, traveled a lot. And we were in New York City and there was a round of layoffs where I worked. And we had to make a decision. Should we continue to live in a very expensive apartment in Manhattan or try something completely different? And Christy had an idea.
So I've been thinking about this book project that I wanted to do with Chris, where we traveled the country and talked to people who are kind of choosing to live a little differently and maybe opt out of the mainstream American dream, which we kind of define as that 9-to-5 job, big mortgage on your house, all the stuff and kind of consumed by that consumerism. And so we've been traveling the country talking to people who are choosing to find financial independence and retire early, people who are choosing to build their own houses, build sustainably, people who are living like us on the road in RVs or vans or buses or whatever. So the idea of living on the road actually just came from, well, that seems like a really practical way to travel the country for cheap and to be able to like go to all these places and meet all these people we want to interview. Chris got laid off and like 2 days later, we're like, yeah, let's buy a van, build it out ourselves, live in it and travel the country and talk to people and find out why people are living differently and what we can learn from them.
Which sounds very exciting. And then you realize that neither of us had ever used a power tool before. And we had never worked with our hands. I was a commercial fisherman in Alaska after college, and that's the last time I think I've been outside.
That's pretty hardcore, though.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, yeah. I was poor at it, and they called me names. But, you know, it was tough. But we had not built anything. We had no carpentry skills. We had no engineering skills and anything like that. But there was all these kids on YouTube that kept building houses and vans that looked like we could do that. So we gave away almost everything. Sold what we could, left our apartment, went down to Florida where it was warm. This was around winter time.
And where our parents live.
And where our parents live.
Okay.
And we bought a used Ram ProMaster, which is like one of those like work van, one of the white work vans with a high top.
Yeah, we just went out to see it and it's pretty small and I could barely fit in it. I'm 6'5", so I had to
bend over. Abnormally tall.
Abnormally, for sure. But you had a pretty sweet setup. Tell us about your setup.
We shrunk down to 72 square feet. The electricity is solar powered. We have 200 watts of solar up top, and that powers our refrigerator, running water, lights, and if you need to charge your phone or electricity. We also have a water containment system that gives us about 100 liters of water at a time, and a bed that can fold into couches during the day. It took us 1 month to build because we had a deadline. Every day we were spending longer not moving out of our apartment in New York, we had to pay to be in New York. So we had to build the van, get it to New York, get rid of our stuff, and not pay New York rent anymore. And
I hear it's expensive up there.
It can be, definitely. And we started in May of 2018, and we've been on the road. We've done 24,000 miles ever since.
Wow. You guys are coming up now in almost a year. Mm-hmm. Like, what are your thoughts now towards travel? So obviously you mentioned, Christy, how it's an effective, maybe affordable way to see the country, get on the road, meet lots of interesting folks. Now that you've been doing it for close to 12 months now, do you feel the same towards travel that you did, you know, back when you did start?
Yeah. First of all, I'll say the van life that you see on Instagram, the glamorous, like sexy 20-year-olds camping on the beach.
Why
like,
are they always without pants? Where did their pants
go? That guy's shirt?
They can't afford pants because they live in a van.
Their mom didn't join them on the road to tell them, put your pants on. Yeah.
So that is not real van life. Yeah. Van life is more like a really extended camping trip or living in a cabin without running water.
Hot running water.
Without hot running water or a toilet.
And going to the bathroom with your spouse close to you. Closer to
all right. So how, on the bathroom note, that's definitely a curiosity.
Let's just talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get it out of the way now. That's definitely a question that people have when they hear people taking an alternative route like this and living in a van. How does that work when you have to go, especially like in the middle of the night? And how many Captain D's have you had to go to the bathroom at?
I guess Captain D is question. Like a gas station. Is that what?
No, like the fish joint. Like, I don't know, like a fast food restaurant. Oh, come on. Like,
what? Y'all. All right.
Down in the South, there's a lot of Captain
D's. Or McDonald's. Okay. Okay. McDonald's. How many?
I think that in order to understand our whole van situation, that you have to understand that one of my core values is simplicity. And so our van build and our van is very simple. And so we chose the most simple toilet situation that we could think of, apart from peeing in a mason jar or a Gatorade bottle, which is what a lot of people do.
Like Dumb and Dumber style.
Yeah. So we just have a camp toilet. It was like, you know, super cheap, bought on Amazon. It's just a plastic thing that has a container at the bottom that you can take off and then dump into.
It's a real toilet.
Yeah, it's small enough that you could carry it and we just take it off and then like dump it into a toilet somewhere.
I just take it off and dump it somewhere. I do.
That's all right, so now nice. We know the division of labor a little bit too.
But so real quick though, let's get back to the question though. Like, has your attitudes changed
to travel.
Towards travel? Okay. Yeah, we kind of got diverted by the toilet talk, which I love.
Has our attitude changed to travel? Yes, because I had no idea that you could live in America for free. If you build your own systems, as we did, that provide electricity through the sun and enough water to carry around with you.
And a contained toilet. No one wants you like peeing on the ground.
And a shelter in the van. You can very realistically live in the United States almost rent free. And that is through Bureau of Land Management land, National Forest land, through technology. There are so many ways to share information with other people doing this to say where you can stay and where you cannot. I grew up thinking that anything fun had to cost money. Mm. You had to pay for a campsite. Why are we even paying for this campsite? It's crowded with tacky people. Mm. Why are we doing this? And we found that the best campsites and the best places are all free. And, you know, if you pool together your money for gas and food, and after that, there's very few expenses.
I learned that a little bit. I took a 3-month road trip across the country back in the day, and I learned that a little bit. There's this website, couchsurfing.com, and people are more than happy to list their house. And then in turn, when I had a place here in Atlanta, I'd listed mine and people could stay there. And that kind of community exists and there are free places to stay. You just have to look for them and you just have to decide to live life a little bit differently. Speaking of which, your van is pretty small. You said 72 square feet. What was the decision? Was it pure simplicity, Christy, because that's something you care about a lot? Or why did you go for something so intensely small as opposed to something a little bit bigger for your travels?
There is a van that is a bit bigger than the current van that we have. Ours is kind of like middle size. Basically, just to give people an idea of the living space is 6 feet by 12 feet by, you know, 6 foot one, basically.
Yeah, not tall enough for me.
No. And we chose this size van because we can park in any parking spot.
Nice.
Chris is an excellent driver. He can even maneuver that into a compact spot sometimes. And also, there are limitations a lot of places on the length of vehicle. In some national parks, your vehicle can only be so long. Some like back roads and dirt roads that we take in national forest, your vehicle can only be so long. And so we just wanted to be nimble and able to get around and be able to park wherever we wanted to park. In addition to that, our van is just like a white van. It looks more or less like a Sprinter van, but it looks like, you know, a plumber's van or a work van, and we can just park it on the street in front of your house and sleep here. And no one would really question, for the most part, whether or not like someone was in there or if that was like legitimately could be there.
Right.
And so part of the reason why we don't have an RV or a trailer to pull or something like that is so that we can stealth camp wherever we want.
Right.
And we've stealth camped in several cities. It's not the most comfortable thing to do, and you kind of want to be quiet and keep the lights down. But we can do it if we need to, which is good.
And that was a big part of why we chose that van is the price. As far as if you want to be traveling for an extended period of time, to pay for a campsite every night, $25, $30 a night will add up so quickly. And an RV, in many cases, is not self-contained. You have to go to and hook up. You have to dump your water or whatever. We don't have to do that. We can do it on our own individually. And we are, as Christy said, incredibly nimble, and it allows us to extend this trip because it's far less expensive. Also, gas mileage. A big RV is going to give you 6 miles per gallon.
Jeez.
And we're doing about 17 to 18 miles per gallon, which will get you so much further.
Yeah, I love that you have systems set up in place that allows you, like you said, to be more flexible. And you want to be able to explore all the different options, right? When you're limited, if you're limited by the size because you have a 30-foot trailer, or a 30-foot RV, like there's maybe some national parks that you can't actually make it to. That's kind of a bummer because it's not like you have another vehicle that you're pulling behind that vehicle.
Yeah, and part of the reason that we chose to do this, part of the reason why we chose to give away and sell all our possessions is to experiment in very voluntary simplicity, but kind of extreme simplicity. So, you know, we have basically 25 gallons of water, which can last us a week even in the desert if we're not taking showers. But we don't have a lot of clothes in our van. We actually, it's kind of crazy, we have our full camping gear because we actually do still go camping. We have our backpacking gear, our backpacking tents, like all that stuff.
Nice.
Which sounds funny because
you're basically camping all the time.
We're camping all the time. But
sometimes you just
like,
got to get away from it all.
Just leave it all behind. You want to go camping tonight? Let's do it.
That's awesome. On the subject of your van.
Yeah.
Can you tell us just a little bit about, you said it took a month to build, but about how much did it cost to buy the van and then build it out that people kind of know if they're interested in getting into something like that?
So the costs can vary so widely, just like anything. Let me start at the beginning. We visited an RV store, one of those big Camping World warehouse kind of places, and they have these beautiful RVs and stuff that looks a lot like what we have, just fancier. And we thought, well, maybe we'll just buy one and then we can hit the road right now. Until we looked at the price, and we're talking $125,000 for the same chassis and the systems that we built, just by professionals, I suppose. And we saw maybe one for $70,000-$80,000.
Wow.
They'll tell you, well, you just, you know, finance it. It's like, you know, we're already facing student
rather
loans.
Not.
I'm not going to
put
on another, you know, huge finance loan. I remember a guy told us, well, you kids, you watch your YouTubes and you think you can just build your own van. No, how are you going to power your microwave and your television? You can't build your own van. And I'm like, we're not going to have them. He's like, you have to have a television. And we said, no. And it was just very strange, awkward interaction with this salesman. So we were resolved to build our own through Home Depot, Lowe's, and whatever else little places we bought, all the materials.
Amazon,
huge. And we built it for about $5,000 plus the cost of the van. And the van, we bought it gently used. So that came to around $25,000. But you can go much cheaper. You can buy an older van just for a couple grand. We just knew that with the limited time we'd be on the road underneath 2 years, we just did not want to have to deal with fixing things a lot. And hopefully we can turn around and sell it later on when we're finished, because we did put a lot of labor and work into it. And when people just want to hit the road, you know, they'll pay a little money to go and have to build it themselves.
Yeah. So that's the cost for the build out. Do you have an idea as far as what you spend monthly? You know, so while you're on the road, I know it certainly, like, it varies depending on what you're doing, what sites you're seeing, what you're paying for. but like on average.
Yeah. Let's talk about just the basic costs and then you can add on all the fun you want on your own. Right. I'll do a rundown for you guys. Car payment, about $950 a month. Trying to get that paid off real quickly. Insurance, $125 a month. If you're building it out on your own, it's often going to be considered a commercial vehicle. So you'll pay a little bit more for that insurance. Our average gas cost in 2018 was $281 a month. That will depend on how much you drive and where you're driving.
And we went 23,000 miles last year. So it was a pretty big trip.
And you can do a great van life experience without driving that much.
Right.
Right.
All right. Cell phone. We have two cell phones with data plans and an iPad with a data plan too to do some work on it. $120 a month. Groceries, $560 a month. Planet Fitness, where we may shower, $23 a month.
Oh, there you go. That's how you get the showers. Yep. Nicely done. Uh-huh.
Laundry, $30 a month for laundromats. And what's called Harvest Hosts. This is a program that allows us to stay on farms, vineyards, and golf courses for free to sleep overnight. And then we can pick up our fresh fruits and vegetables or wine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That sounds awesome.
So we paid at the time $45 for the whole year for that. The total is right around $2,100 a month. Wow. In expenses. I will tell you that that is so much less than one monthly rent payment on our apartment back in New York.
Just on rent.
Yeah. This is everything. And then the rest would be entertainment, eating out. And that's totally up to the consumer, of course.
Yeah, it's up to you guys.
So $2,100 for your basics, if you're eating in and traveling.
And not spending money on campgrounds.
Well, yeah, the reason we ask that is, I mean, on average, like the average American expenses that you typically hear are like maybe around $60,000. And that comes down to about $5,000 a month. And what you just outlined right there, you're looking at less than half of what the average American is spending. At the same time, you're able to see the country. You're able to see sites that people would dream of seeing or pay a ton of money to go see. And you guys are basically rolling that into your life right now while saving a ton of money. So kudos to you guys. I love that.
All right, Matt, we'll get more into what a typical day looks like with Chris and Christy and whether they think that this is kind of lifestyle is possible with kids, and even more questions right after the break.
All right, we're back from the break. And real quick, I wanted to ask you guys, how long have y'all, so y'all are married, how long have y'all been together? And did you do any traveling, say, before you went on this big trip, right? Like, do you have a history of learning how to travel together, that whole thing, as we sort of dive into the more of the lifestyle of life on the road?
So Chris and I have been together for about 13 years. We've been married for 5, going on 6. Yeah. We've done quite a lot of traveling together and learning to be flexible in different situations. When we first started dating, when we just graduated from college, we decided to go to India and work in Mother Teresa's charities in Kolkata. And we spent 4 months traveling the subcontinent, sleeping on trains, jumping off trains, riding on top of buses, doing everything that was dangerous. And
But it sounds very legit. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. And then we worked in Mother Teresa's charities for a month and a half or so, and we learned a lot about each other and how to deal with hardship together.
Let's be a little more specific, if you don't mind, Christy. we were working under pretty, you know, like tough conditions, like with people going through incredibly hard times. Yeah. And that was very stressful, you know, to experience that, especially as a kind of a Westerner that hasn't experienced that before. Also, we were in a place where the bathroom situation was not as closed off from the living situation as we are used to in the West. And there are sicknesses when you're traveling. And you can imagine having a traveling sickness with someone you just started dating and they're right there on the other side of just the partition. And we had to decide, wow, are we going to just accept this way that we are, like our humanity together, and love each other, and you know, if we can go through this, we can go through quite about anything. And that's as specific as I imagine viewers want us to be. But the point is that we started our relationship going through something very trying. And I think that that has helped sustain through our relationship for all these years.
Speaking of which, we're talking about living in poverty. And I'm sure, yeah, you get to know somebody really quickly in an environment like that. But when it comes to living in a van, like you guys are doing, there are certainly people who are forced to live in a van, or that is the only place that they can find because of financial circumstances. And yet there is this kind of van life, hashtag van life movement on Instagram. And there's all these, as you mentioned, pantsless people that are just Instagramming the heck out of it, becoming influencers and all that crazy stuff. What has it been like for you on the road, the kind of people that you've met? And what's your take on kind of the dichotomy of the situation that people traveling in vehicles and vans across the country find themselves in?
Well, I think this also plays along in the FIRE community and the minimalist community, because in those communities, often they're based on a lot of privilege, on education, on taking risks, because you know that there is some kind of cushion, whether it's family or financial, in the background. You're lucky to be born maybe in a family that taught you these values, right? And in van life, as you spoke, there is this Instagram van life that is privilege. It's a lot of people choosing to live that way for reasons, for experimental reasons, or for lifestyle reasons, and then
for money saving reasons, right.
But then there's also people who are struggling in the United States today, working jobs that don't pay enough or unable to find work at all, that are finding their only way they can live is on the road or in vans. It's documented in a great book called Nomadlands, and I think it's really important to show that there are different kind of reasons that people go out and do this, and to acknowledge the privilege when it's there. And I think that we have that, and we're grateful to be able to do this because of that. So yeah, I just want to point that out for sure. But the kind of people we meet, I'll tell you one thing that's so fascinating on this trip. I came from Washington in a political background in journalism. And if you live in Washington right now, you feel as though the United States is on the brink of some kind of weird civil war. You hear that all the time in the media and everything. But what we find with people as we've traveled is that people might come from different places in the way they see the world, but the ones that are living out their intentionality are arriving at the same places at the end, even if they come from completely different spots. Mm-hmm. They're arriving in voluntary simplicity, in focusing on community building, also, you know, like frugality and things like that.
Rejecting consumerism.
And, you know, we were in Puerto Rico a couple months ago building self-sustainable houses, and we're talking like dreadlock Sandinistas are working with like Ayn Rand libertarians for totally different reasons to build the same thing.
Yeah.
And we've seen so much of that. I know that was a lot of places I just went.
No, that's awesome. I love that. Let's talk a little bit too about, I guess, so your lifestyle now. So now that you guys are on the road, what does your typical day look like? You wake up, we'll start there. We'll start in the morning and then we'll end at night wherever you are going to arrive. Christy, let's kick this off to you.
Chores, right?
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about the glamorous image of van life on Instagram. It is not by any means glamorous. There's a lot of chores. It's kind of like I said, like living in a cabin where everything is manual and you have to fetch your own water and make sure you have fuel and electricity and all these things, you know, and there's a big learning curve too. I will say that for anyone who is thinking about this lifestyle, it takes about a good couple of months to figure out how to find a place to sleep every night, you know, how to kind of function in a small space and with your systems. But for us, a normal day, usually, you know, we wake up, I would say like the majority of the time, if we're not at a harvest host location, we're at National Forest or something like that. Like basically we're in the woods somewhere camping for free. And so we wake up, Chris makes coffee. It's very important. This is husbandly duty. We have a lot of chores that we have to do. Living in a van requires you to always do your dishes and put all of them away. Hmm. Always requires you to, you know, change out the waters. We have a little cook stove. We have to take that out, put it together, put it away every time we cook. And so, you know, to make coffee, either if we have enough solar, we use an like electric kettle, or we use our propane stove, you know, to heat up the water. And then Chris and I are really big into having at least some semblance of normalcy. So we every day read in the morning. That's very important to us. We don't talk. We don't look at our phones. We don't do any of that. We don't work. We just read for as long as we can get away with. And then we have breakfast together. And then we usually go somewhere and do a little work in the morning. And one sneaky cost of van life that I've noticed a lot of people get in the habit of is going to coffee shops and places like that to do your work, mm-hmm. where you have to buy a coffee and then maybe you feel bad and you buy another coffee or you buy a lunch or whatever.
Joel doesn't feel that pressure, by the way.
Yeah.
We've covered that in previous episodes.
Chris and I, we hardly ever go to coffee shops. We always go to public libraries.
Yes.
We love public libraries. We've been to public libraries all across the country. They're wonderful. They're helpful. You can stay there as long as they're open and have free Wi-Fi, and no one gives you the evil eye for not buying another cup of coffee.
Nice.
So we usually go to a library or something like that and, you know, do a couple hours of work. We're both working sort of as freelance writers right now. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing.
And so then you want to get out. So like in the summertime, we'll hike 5 to 10 miles a day when you have that time of daylight to be able to do that.
So is that typically how you spend your afternoons? Mm-hmm. So you get up, yep. kind of get your coffee, you kind of have some, you know, some downtime in the morning, mm-hmm. go off that morning, try to get some work done. Mm-hmm. And then, so like, is this the afternoons?
Afternoon,
maybe like after yep. lunch, after, you are yep. you're spending
probably about like 3 or 4 in the afternoon, then go do a good solid hike, and then come home, make dinner, and then do all the chores all over again. Everything yeah. has to be cleaned. Everything has to be put away. You only have so many things, so you can't just put them somewhere else. Right. So many places.
Yeah. Are you eating most of your meals in the van?
Yes. Yes. In the summertime, you know, you can spread out a little bit. I think it's hard in a colder climate. You, mm-hmm. you're just so stuffed in, which is why we followed the weather as much as we could.
Oh, nice.
The van up until the other day did not have any heat at all. We just bought like a space heater because like, okay, let's just plug in if it's too cold. But we were up at the top of the Canadian Rockies at the height of summer, and we were in the Florida Keys in the bottom of winter.
Right.
So that was our climate control, was our wheels.
That's very cool. Well, you mentioned making money on the road. Y'all are freelance journalists, which is super cool and definitely a job that you can take with you. And there are lots of people in the current economy that can find a way to ask for some time away so that they can, you know, they could work on the road. They could ask for that and their employers would grant it to them. What else have you found occupationally that people are up to as you travel and meet people that are, yeah, living life on wheels?
We just spent a weekend at the RV Entrepreneur Summit, which is a gathering of people that live and work on the road so they could share ideas. It was kind of like a business conference for nomads, basically.
Nice.
And we met, obviously, writers, a lot of people doing digital services for companies, which can be so many things, but often is like handling their social media accounts, Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, and then handling multiple people. Also folks running sales businesses just on the road. And then other people who work in maybe an IT or something that is digital that they can work wherever. They work for a regular company like IBM or whatever, and they just work wherever they want to. And they had to ask to do that, or they were told that they are now remote. And then they said, okay, bye. They bought an RV and sold their house. The one drawback, though, I'd say to working, if you're working full time on the road, you have to be like at a desk from 9 to 5. That structure is really difficult on the road because your whole day is stuck having to be so-called on, you know, online. When can you go anywhere else? You've worked a full day, and then at 5 p.m., you're going to drive across the desert to get to the next place. That was a common complaint we heard from people that the best case scenario is to be able to own your own time schedule and be able to work when and how you want it to. And the 9 to 5 is a really hard thing to just jam into like the nomadic RV life. Although people do it and are incredibly happy, and they do it with children.
That was the next question. How is it possible with children, do you think?
I don't know.
We do not have children.
You haven't done it, but you've seen at least, right?
We have seen people in vans similar to our size with 2 children or 3 living with them in the van. And their dog, which is always some kind of Saint Bernard or something crazy.
Like the largest dog.
Yeah, like how do you guys do? It's just the two of us. We're like, this is plenty. But people get, you know, they can upsize. They do the buses. They do the vans, the bigger vans.
The RVs.
And that makes it possible. And people who were just going to take like a 6-month or 12-month trip end up doing it for years. Mm. It is, we're at this wonderful place in the United States, or I guess around the world, where you have this intersection of technology and ability, where people can work wherever they want. They don't have to live the way everyone told them they're supposed to. And FIRE people know that, you know, really well. And so do these like digital nomads. They say like, there's no reason I have to live like my mom and dad. I can do 10 million more things just because of the availability. We just have to be flexible enough to take advantage of it.
Have you seen, is it Captain Fantastic or Captain Awesome?
That was a very influential movie, wasn't it, Christy?
Yeah. Like you mentioned, like the school bus and, you know, with lots of kids. It made me think of that movie there for a second. You like that one?
We love that movie. That's a great movie.
I thought that movie was great in that it wasn't just a one-sided film to say the minimalists are right. He was a conflicted character, the father in this film, you know, and they had to strike some balance in the end, which I think made it an excellent movie.
Yeah. And more true to life, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to community, you guys left New York City, and I'm not sure what your community was like there. I know for Matt and I, we've talked about this, and going on the road would be so cool, but the difficulty would be how much we would miss our community, the people that we live closely with, that in our neighborhood, and just so many good friends and a pace of life here. How has that transition been for you, and have you missed your friends and your community, and yeah, what's that been like?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a wonderful community in New York City. We had a church about a block away from our house, and we'd have a small group, and after church you'd be like, hey, you guys want to come over? And it was really wonderful. We had a lot of wonderful friends there, and we have a lot of wonderful friends in DC as well, where we lived for 10 years before we moved to New York. So community is really the struggle on the road for a lot of people. We do go occasionally to van meetups where we meet up with people who are very similar to us, and we feel, you know, like really pumped, and we're like, this is great. Mm-hmm. Look at all these people who are doing what we're doing. One thing about people who live in vans, though, is that we're all moving to different places and moving around constantly. And so you don't get to see those people very often. Occasionally after a van meetup, we'd just be like, hey, you guys want to go somewhere and travel together? And we'd travel with someone for a week, or go with one group for a couple of days and another group for a couple of days, which is really cool. But one thing we do try to do is most Sundays, wherever we are, we try to find a church, any church, and go to it. So we just like are driving down the road and we're like, there is a church. It doesn't matter what
it's
kind.
Usually which church has their services between 11 and noon.
Yeah. sometimes we go to Catholic, sometimes we go to Methodist, Presbyterian, anything. We'll just go and pop in and talk to people. And if they have a little fellowship afterwards where they have lunch or coffee or something, we stop to talk to them. Usually a lot of places we've been, you know, churches, especially big denominations like the old Methodists and stuff, are really like, you know, kind of getting older and sort of starting to kind of die off. And they're very excited to see young people in the church, and everyone wants to talk to us. And we're like, oh, we're just passing through. We're actually leaving right after this.
Thanks for the coffee and donuts. Yeah.
I think the community question, that has probably been the hardest part, honestly. And it has really emphasized to me the importance of being present with people when you are with them, and not just being absent. We've all been on our phones or whatever is distracting us from those moments of pure community that are so important. And so with that loss in our lives, and let's not kid ourselves, community is essential to our human livelihoods. This is very important stuff. And you have to intentionally seek it out when you're on the road. And I would argue you have to do so when you're living a more normal life too. Mm. But it has been on the forefront of our minds and is something we really work to try to facilitate whenever we can.
I think that's a good point, that even in our normal everyday life, we forsake community so much of the time. Most Americans don't know their neighbor or have a vibrant community where they live. And that's something that takes intentionality, whether you're living in a van or you're living a traditional lifestyle, right?
Yeah. And so to that note, you mentioned earlier, you briefly just said it, but you said 2 years. It sounded like that 2 years was going to be maybe like the time frame that you're going to be operating within. So are you planning to settle down somewhere, at the end of the 2 years? And B, two-part question, is this just really just a giant scouting trip to figure out where you want to live?
Yeah,
we have been testing every place we visit. I'm like, would we want to live here? Yeah. Could we live here? Based upon many different, you know, parameters. But yeah, we're looking at where we want to settle down, where we'll be financially feasible, where work can be. We loved New York City. We'll go back to New York if there's an opportunity that makes it possible. And we also want to start a family if that is in the cards for us. We're in our 30s now. Time's ticking. So yeah. Yeah, that's kind of our timeline. And we have no interest in being pregnant in a van.
I mean, is it Christy?
Yeah. No. Okay, right. I didn't mean to speak for you. Yeah.
Our wives are pregnant. I don't think they'd be into that either. So
yeah, probably not. But we're totally with you though. Joel and I, we often talk about traveling. It's like, oh, we could take the podcast on the road, load up the families. But the number one thing we would miss, certainly we have our own friendship and our families, but we would totally miss the community that we're a part of here. And for us, that is just so incredibly important. And even you mentioned the van meetups, and that's great. And you can do some things for the moment. But if you try to maintain those relationships, well, what does that turn into? It turns into you maintaining these relationships electronically. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, that's not true relationship. It's mm-hmm. sort of a stopgap until you're able to see each other again. At least that's one of the ways that I view sort of maintaining relationships digitally.
I'm real excited someday to be able to know that like every Wednesday night, I'm going to have dinner with the same group of people that are going to come over and have a drink and have dinner together. And that's something we just don't have anymore. Mm. We have it together and we try to facilitate community on our small scale together. But to be able to have that consistency of relationships, that is something we're really looking forward to.
Yeah. Hard to build deep, meaningful relationships on the road, except for with your significant other, which is definitely something that I got to imagine you guys will never forget. We'll get into a little bit more of this discussion, especially some of the highlights and lowlights. I'm really interested to hear that right after this break. All right, we're back. Highlights and lowlights. Chris, I saw you smile when I said lowlights. So will you fill us in? What's the hardest or biggest lowlight of this trip so far?
Well, I'll premise that the van life is agony and ecstasy. The ecstasy is opening up your back doors and looking out the ocean and be like, wow, we live at the ocean today. This is amazing. The low part was probably in the beginning when we were still getting used to the systems that we were trying to build. We didn't understand how everything works, even though we had put it together, or it was clunky because we had put it together, you know? Our second night, we're in rural Maine on an alpaca farm. That's where we're staying for the night through the Harvest Host program. And I said, oh, well, I'm going to go make dinner on our butane stove outside. I put it on a plastic table. I didn't bring a light. It's pitch black outside. I go to kind of light the stove, and I don't really notice that there's like oil leaking onto the table. Light a match, everything bursts into a huge flame of fire. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I go to flip over the table to put out the fire. The table slides under the van. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the van's going to explode and all the alpacas are going to be dead. And I know this is going to be it. And then I pulled it out and we made it. And Christy's like, what's going on back there? I'm like, nah, nothing. It's fine. Then the freezing rain came over the next couple of days. Christy threw out her back. We didn't know the systems yet, and we were wondering, what are we going to do? It's cold. The wife's miserable, and I'm hungry. She can't make dinner, and I lit the table on fire. So that was like the first week.
That's a low light in the first week. I can see how the beginning would be the toughest part, for
it
sure.
It is,
right?
For sure.
Yeah, again, I mean, setting up those systems. Like, once you have a process, like, you have your chores that you know that you're going to set up, like, that's no different than the life that we live when we're not moving, when we're stationary. You kind of have your roles, whether that's work or knowing when you're going to go into work and having that structure. That's one of the things that you mentioned earlier that really stood out to me, is how important maintaining some sort of semblance of normal life and having that structure. Mm-hmm. Man, I really identify with that. And I think I would quickly find myself setting up systems and efficiencies and ways to make life easier.
All right, Christy, highlights so far of your trip. You guys have been doing this almost a year. What's like the pinnacle? What's the best part?
So, you know, we live, as we all know, an amazing country, and being able to travel and see it all and meet so many wonderful, nice people all over the country. Chris was saying a little earlier that, you know, some, you know, East Coast urbanites think that the country is torn apart and we have all this political discord. But the reality is, you go into any bar in any little town across the country and people are kind and good and only care about the same things that you care about: their families, their job, you know, how to put food on the table and send their kids to school. And I think that being able to, you know, Chris and I have lived only in Washington, D.C. and New York City for our entire adult lives. And so that's kind of a very limited perspective of the country. And so being able to go all the way across the country and talk to people and see what people are really about and realize that, you know, we're all pretty much the same. We're all doing the same things and caring about the same things, just in different ways. I think that, combined with like the beauty of our country and being able to see it and being able to experience the parks and the forests and everything firsthand and in a very intimate way, has been really the best part.
And I'll add that there is a snooty attitude in many East Coast city circles that any life outside of those is mediocre. It's fine. It's cute. It's quaint. No, life outside of those cities is thriving. Medium-sized cities, certain small towns, rural communities are doing incredible things that I envy not being a part of. And the world is not LA, DC, New York. And I know that for most listeners, they'd be like, well, duh, Chris, of course. But you got to understand how limited your viewpoint gets when you live in those cities. You start to think that that is the only thing that matters and everything else is fine. Yeah. No, it's great out there.
Man, that's awesome. I love hearing how, like, seeing the country, seeing the beauty, getting out there in nature. I could totally have seen myself in your shoes maybe 10 years ago. So I want to get to that. So what advice would you give to maybe our listeners who are thinking, man, this sounds amazing. Like, this is something I can do. I can work from wherever I want. I do database management. I can work whenever I want, wherever I want. What advice would you give people if they're thinking about doing this themselves, and what things should they consider?
So I would say, first of all, know what you're getting yourself into. So there are a bunch of different ways that you could try on van life or living on the road. There's a RV share. There's a bunch of different companies now that have vans that you can rent for a week or 2 weeks and go out and try it. Like we've been saying, it looks glamorous on Instagram, but the reality is it is one heck of an extended camping trip. And if you don't like camping, you're not going to like living in your van. Trust me. So if you don't like being in nature and you'd prefer to be in the city, living in a van in a city is very difficult, and you're going to have to go out to eat, and it's basically like sneaking around and trying not to get caught by the police. And so if you feel like you have to be in the city, then it might not be the best thing for you. If you want to be able to go out in nature and stay for an extended period of time, then, like, yeah, maybe you should try it.
And you mentioned some of the RV rental sites, or
so
companies.
RV Share is one of them. You actually rent from a person, like rent their van or their RV.
Like Airbnb, but for RVs.
I think so. Okay. I've never tried it, but I believe so. There's Escapees, which is actually, they're out of a bunch of major cities, LA, Miami, New York, where you can rent a van through them, like fly into that city and then go do the California coast or whatever.
Is that the Escape van?
Yeah, it's Escape van.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Escape van. Sorry. There's a bunch of different options if you want to try on that life. We did not try on that life before we decided to do it. We decided to go all in, but we knew we had a limited amount of time to do this, so we were able to do it. I would also say, if you're the kind of person who always has to be comfortable and clean and all those things, like,
this smelling is not, nice.
This is not really for you either. There's a lot of uncomfortable situations. You know, sometimes even if the van is like parked a little bit at an angle, like sometimes it could, like, you know, mess up your back or something.
Is that how you threw your back out? Early
no,
on?
No,
moving.
Moving.
Okay.
We moved the week before.
I thought you were trying to carry one of those alpacas that Chris tried to kill.
Yeah. No? We heard a great piece of advice from someone that was considering doing this, and they basically knew the square footage of the RV or van they wanted to have, and they took tape, put it in their home where they lived, and they said, for X amount of weeks, we are only going to exist within this tape, and we're going to move our furniture to fit in it, and we're not going out. And if we just hate it, then we saved ourselves lots of time and aggravation.
That is brilliant.
And it ruined really the feng shui of their house for several weeks. But they realized that they could adjust the rhythms of their life to make it possible. And you would be shocked how you can adjust, how you get used to, in our case, unplugging the refrigerator so you can plug in the hot water pot for coffee. And that just becomes part of your life because you don't have enough sunlight to power both.
That's so cool. Yeah. So what have you guys learned when it comes to your money? What have you learned financially through this experience about what it takes to survive? Obviously, you're living on less than what you're paying in rent, purely just your rent in New York. And you're living on less than that. What sort of financial lessons will you take with you when you move into a more traditional life?
Let me make a proclamation here. We gave away most of our stuff. I don't miss anything. I can't think of a thing that I desire other than hot running water. That's it. And the one thing we have kept adding is books. We know Kindles exist, but we're like the bookmobile outside right now. But I mean, we don't really miss, I don't miss a thing. And so that has taught me that in any purchase going forward, when we do have a home that we'll need to fill up, we are going to be so thoughtful about how we go about doing that. I would make impulse purchases like anyone. You know, one time I was like, I'm going to start boxing. And I bought boxing gloves. And I used them twice. And then I had boxing gloves in the quarter.
Or
you know,
he came back from Hawaii with a surfboard.
Yeah, which I am a surfer. So like it made sense, but it was a ridiculous thing to buy for New York City. But I'm going to be thinking so much more about buying anything, because it's not just about buying it. It's, and then where is this going to go? Where is this going to go in 10 years? What am I going to be doing with it then? How am I going to get rid of it or whatever? And you have to have an end plan for anything like that. That's for me.
Yeah. So one of the big lessons of van life and living in any tiny space is learning to be minimalist to some extent. And for us, obviously we've talked about the privilege to be able to do this, to have gotten rid of all of our stuff, and also to know, like, in the future, like, yeah, we could always buy more stuff again. It's not a problem. But the big lesson, I think, for both of us is the idea of choosing to live a voluntarily simple life. And so right now in the van, we don't have a lot of space. So we are very conscious about what we buy, except for when we buy books, which we buy a lot of, because everything has its place and there is only so much space for all the things that we have.
Even if that thing's cool, you just don't have room for it. Yeah.
There's no like knickknacks floating around. Sometimes I pick up rocks and then I have all these rocks somewhere and then I'm like, why do I have these rocks?
You sound like my daughter.
Part of Chrissy's rock collection.
Anyway, that kind of training coupled with, so voluntary simplicity coupled with what we've learned kind of throughout this process, which is the world and our society tells you, you have to consume and you have to have stuff to be just a little bit more happy. We have found that without any stuff or any like new things, just absolutely what we need, that we are absolutely plenty happy. And part of this lifestyle does involve a lot of organizing and reorganizing and making sure everything has its place, because if not, it just doesn't work. But we hope that like the lesson we take from this is seeing that message that's coming from the world for what it is, that you don't need more stuff to be happy. You just need to learn to be content. If you really need something, like you need a coat or long underwear or whatever, we of course go out and buy it. But you need to learn to be content with what you have. And if you can't be content with what you have in this country where we have so much, we have access to everything we could possibly want in the entire world, if we're not content with what we have now, we're not going to be content with anything. And that is, I think, the ultimate lesson that we've learned from van life, that if I'm not content with my clothes and my shoes now, then I'm not going to be content with my husband 5 years from now. You know, we have this upgrade society where it's like we always need something else. We need to upgrade our car, our phone, our stuff to be happy. And that, I think, trains us to think, I need to upgrade my relationship. I need to upgrade my house, I need to upgrade my job in order to be happy. And the reality is, like, happiness is not in any of those things. Happiness is in the contentment that we find in what we have currently.
When we first went to a van meetup, you get to see all the other vans and how much better their craftsmanship is than yours, where you were perfectly happy and proud of what you had built. Look how cool it is. Look how beautiful. And then you see someone else's pine walls, their cedar walls, and their beautiful carpentry.
And somehow they were able to fit a shower in the same amount of space.
And you know, we'd find ourselves getting van envy, just as you'd get, you know, suburban Jones envy, you know, I got to have that car. And, you know, we're talking about it and we had to catch ourselves and go, wait, no, we don't want that. We just built this and it's great and it's ours. And it is this thing that just pings at you over and over of, if you look at the Ten Commandments, the last one is thou shalt not covet. It's the only one that is said twice. It says, thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not covet. Like, it says it twice. And that means, in the, you know, they didn't have italics back then. So that's how they emphasized it. And it also took a lot to like put it into the stone, right? So they were really telling you something. It is part of who we are as humans. And we have to be okay with the limited amount that we have.
Yeah. And I find the same thing. So what Chris is talking about, van envy, but we found the same thing. Like, you know, we try not to spend a lot of time on social media. I didn't have any social media before.
I did for work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we lived in a van, we didn't have Instagram or anything. And now we go on Instagram, we see like our van friends out there and we're like, man, they're having so much fun. Maybe they're doing this better than us. And we're just like, no.
We're having a great time.
We're like, we're having the time of our lives. We don't need to be comparing our life and what we're doing to what other people are doing at all. And we don't need to be comparing our van or our vehicle or our houses to what other people have either. What we have works for us and is meeting its purpose. And that's what's important to us.
Yeah. The levels and ability that we have now to compare ourselves to others have been amplified to such a great degree that it creates that feeling of lack in ourselves, I think, now. And I just see it all over the place. I see it in myself. That's why, because I see it in myself and because you guys see it even in this cool van that you made, and you go out to the campsite and you're like, oh, these other people have better ones. It's just a natural human instinct, and it's only gotten more severe, and our ability to feel those things has amped up so much more because of social media. We talk about that on the show, so I'm just staying away from it, and because that is such a call to consumerism, and it is a call to tell you that you don't have what you need when you do have what you need. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you usually, yeah. typically in this country, you do have what you need. So yeah, those are great thoughts.
We have this thing that Chris and I talk about often. We're living in this society of like constant consumerism where you can go on Amazon or on the internet and get any single thing you could possibly imagine, any specialized, ridiculous thing, and you could get it delivered tomorrow or maybe even today. And this idea that we are like constantly looking for the new thing, putting stuff into our shopping carts online. Chris and I have found, you know, like we all have these disposable incomes. We all can do that. But the reality is it only creates more of a desire to continue to do that and to continue living in that way. And so maybe like one of the things that we've learned through this experience is just say no. Like say like maybe once a month we buy one thing that we don't need. And that's it. Or something like that. Yeah. Have some sort of limit and cap, or put something in your shopping cart and let it sit there for 2 weeks. And if you still think you need it in 2 weeks, then you can buy it. Limiting ourselves and putting voluntary limits on our spending has been like one of the things that we've really appreciated about, you know, what we've learned from this experience.
Yeah. What's amazing too, is that that doesn't change, right? Like you're learning this on the road, but just like you're facing the same temptations and the same desires mm-hmm. on the road with a limited amount of space that someone would in the suburban house, you know, with mm-hmm. the giant lawn. It's the same desires. It's the same sort of call from the sirens. Right. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's amazing that you're realizing that now and can hopefully take that into your life once you're off the road. And stick with those values and those priorities.
One other piece of advice I'd have for folks, and this is based on a lot of conversations with others who've done this, is that you won't necessarily change just because you start living in a van. People think that I'm going to be my best self once I get the RV or the van, and I will be doing yoga and I will be meditating and I will be at peace and I won't be touching the Instagram anymore, yada, yada. No, you are your same awful self at home as you will be in your van. It'll change you, but those things will only be amplified because you'll either be alone or with somebody very closely. And no matter what, you'll notice those things in yourself quite a bit more. So don't think that just because you don't give into the fallacy that if you buy something or just change your living arrangements that you will do better yoga poses or you'll actually put the mat out. Because if you're not putting the mat out now, you're not going to do it when you get a van.
That's a very good point. All right. So can you guys tell us a little bit more about the project you're working on based on this current experience and how much longer you have on the road and then where people can find you too?
So we are planning to do this through the summer at least. That's the best time to travel. You get like double days to do cool stuff. But we are embedding ourselves with communities that are trying to opt out of mainstream ways of living, or at least craft their own ways to thrive in America now that there are so many new tools at hand. The systems we were born into were built by generations past, and they worked for them. And it is okay for us to tweak those systems. There's nothing wrong with that. And so we're embedding ourselves with communities that are testing those out, and individuals that are trying to live intentionally, whether it's community-based, finance-based, housing-based, school-based, trying new things and trying to show people that you don't have to live the way your parents told you you must. There's other ways that are out there and they might just be great for you.
Mm, I love that.
Right now, the best place to find us is on Instagram at lifeoptedout. You can also find us at lifeoptedout.com. We're out there looking for stories about people living this way. And if you're one of those people and you have a cool story, email us at optoutmedia@gmail.com. And please tell us your story. And if we're in your neighborhood, we'll come visit. We're in Atlanta right now. So that's why we're on this show.
Yeah, we're so glad you made an in-person visit to record at Matt's fabled dining room table. And thank you guys, Chris and Christy, so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. This has been a fascinating conversation. I think even for people that aren't interested in living life on the road, there are things that they can take away from this show to live their life a little bit differently, a little more intentionally right now. Just kind of reconsider their actions with money. And you know what? Maybe some people will be inspired to completely change things up and to buy a van of their own and outfit it and hit the road, you know, with their significant other, by themselves, with their family. And I just think that's so cool. So yeah, thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And back to the beer real quick, Joel. We had Nothing Left to Give by Orpheus Brewing. Again, a huge thanks to Jimmy for donating this one to us. We'll keep our tasting notes short, but let's just say this was fantastic, full of fruit and lots of raspberry.
Oh my gosh, man. A throwback to that Jester King beer that we had not too long ago.
That's right.
this was like raspberry deliciousness. Man, I'm such a fan. This is actually, in all seriousness, probably my favorite beer I've ever had from Orpheus.
Ooh,
for sure. And they make some awesome beers. So that's high praise.
Yeah, we've had Wandering Blues before, which is sort of the maybe the blueberry version of this one, and which was fantastic. But yeah, I'm with you. This one is head and shoulders above that. So, but like we mentioned earlier, we're going to post our show notes up on the website as usual at howtomoney.com. And we'll make sure that we have all of those resources that Chris and Christy were mentioning to live free in the U.S.
So, all right, buddy. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.